We're here in Newcastle City Library for the second Canny Comic Con, and one of the people that we've got to talk to today is Dr. Mel Gibson, who is the person behind Dr. Mel Comics and a senior lecturer at Northumbria University. Dr. Mel, if you can call you that, the idea of comics being in a library is obviously as a piece of literature and as something that's been enjoyed by millions over the years, there's still a slight barrier over this for whatever reason. Why do you think that might still be?
There has been a history in Britain of feeling troubled about comics that runs right the way from the 1950s up to date. And that means that a lot of people are quite uncomfortable about the idea of seeing them in libraries. When I started promoting books to libraries as a librarian, I got all sorts of interesting messages in the early 1990s saying, well, this isn't the sort of stuff we'd like to see in a library. And eventually I started convincing people that it would work, that these were works that were valued. But the first breakthrough I had was with people who would have them in the libraries because they were seen as supporting and developing boy readers who were struggling with literacy. Now, obviously, this is actually, in some ways, it's an odd way to get into it. But once the work was in libraries and collections, people would start picking them up, not just the target group. And because they issued well, then it became, this is a valuable element of stock. But that's happened in different places at different times, and nearly every talk I do, I still get somebody saying, for instance, what is this manga anyway, when you're asking about manga? And really having to do that grassroots, changing people's minds and saying, it isn't one thing, it's many things. It's such a wonderful medium. You'll find stuff that you like yourself. So it's still putting over that very basic message and encouraging people to come on in because the water is indeed lovely.
I mean, one of the interesting things, and you've done a talk today at the Comic-Con about the evolution of comics for girls over this decade. So one of the interesting things you were mentioning there is that people's perception of the plague of comics in the modern day is very difficult to different to people's passion about the comics that were in their day.
Yeah, there is a sort of nostalgia factor, and also we're encouraged to forget and lose track of our childhood memories, or see comics as something that you put aside with other materials. So quite regularly when you're interviewing comics readers, they'll say, and then my mum burned them, or when I got married I gave them away, or you know, all of those kind of narratives. There's almost a cut-off point, and then people start to forget. And I discovered that people who were book people often had a block in their mind about remembering what it was they had been passionate about as young people. So they, in effect, were poachers turned gamekeepers. They'd been people who'd been passionate about the medium and who had forgotten and started being gatekeepers against the medium later on. Now, it's quite interesting in that it only takes seeing, well, usually, only takes seeing comics from the era that you're most passionate about to remind you of who you were then and how those texts shaped how you thought about reading. So from my point of view, the other thing for librarians in particular was look at the amount of reading these texts involve. This is an awful lot. If something like School Friend circulates a million a week, then the lack of School Friend is a huge loss in terms of sheer wordage, as well as the appreciation of image, the appreciation of how text and image work together, etc., etc. It's also a loss of history. So trying to get people past all of those boundaries, to bring them back, to remember who it was they were without being embarrassed and without necessarily being embarrassedly nostalgic as well, but to go, actually, there was some great stuff then, there might be great stuff now, is part of the link. And there are so many women creators now doing terrific work. You know, everybody from Hannah Berry, Emma Vicelli, there's just so many people that the work is so varied that I think, in a sense now, although we've lost this history of comics and girls, with a new history emerging at this moment because of the number of women creators who are out there making stuff appealing to a huge range of audiences.
I mean, you mentioned the history element of it, and comics very, very, very much seem to reflect the eras in which they're based. And there seems to be a very, very noticeable evolution in comics, which is, it's very, very noticeable even from like 1 or 2 years difference.
Oh, absolutely. You can see in terms of comics that whatever's significant at a moment, because these were texts that were often created very swiftly, it reflects what's going on around it and sometimes tries to influence what's going on around it if it's a young audience that's intended. So you get a shift in girls' comics, for instance, from ballet in the 50s when it was first fashionable for middle-class girls, through to gymnastics in the 70s when that became fashionable for all girls in junior schools across the UK, or, well, middle schools, I suppose we call them now. So that change takes place over time. And the same in terms of politics. You know, Lois Lane comics in the 1970s had Lois going on marches, feminist marches, and being involved in all kinds of social activism. Well, that moment is worth reflecting on, going back and having a look at. So, yeah, they nearly always pick up on the issues of a particular time. And therefore, as acts of social history, documents of social history, they're also useful, as well as being great reads.
I mean, you yourself, how did you find yourself sort of getting into comics as a young person, and how did you find yourself getting into the leap where you were actually doing comics as talks and research and advocating for comics in libraries?
The first stage actually came through my dad, who's from South Shields, and he says he has early memories of running along behind the vans, the US soldiers who were stationed in the Whitburn area, shouting, "Give us some gum, chum," and swapping cigarettes, him swapping cigarettes as a child, for comics. Because, of course, these were in colour, they were very exciting, and they were given as part of army rations to any service person. So that's where he picked up on it. Now, he ended up being an artist, I think much to his family's surprise, who had a place waiting for him as an apprenticeship in the dockyards. And a lot of his first work was pop art influenced, and he was doing things like cutting up my Flash comics and turning them into Hummingbird Man and embedding them in paintings and stuff like that. So I have some early Flashes, well, not that early, but yeah, fairly early, which are worthless, of course, because they're full of holes because of Dad. However, what he also did, he lectured briefly before he dropped out to just get on with making art and poetry, and he used to practice all his lectures on us first, on my sister and I. So imagine, I'm about 6, she's about 3. And I sat down in the front room and he says, "Today I'm going to do you a lecture on Infantino's drawings of Flash." And you'd hear that lecture, and the next week it'd be Little Grey Rabbit, etc., etc. So I grew up being taught comics in a way that just wasn't done at that point. And I also had a lot of trouble at school. Didn't like school very much. Spend a lot of time in libraries and a lot of time reading, mostly science fiction and fantasy. And if a library had what wouldn't have been called a graphic novels collection, it had things like Asterix and Tintin. I read Asterix and Tintin and Lucky Luke and stuff like that. And of course, I also read Batman and all of those. And I just kept thinking, this is something I want to do something with. And I'd been working as a librarian for about a decade, where I suddenly thought, why don't libraries have more of these graphic novels collections? And I was lucky to have been invited to join in with a book called Graphic Account, which came out in 1993, published by the Youth Libraries Group. And 4 people wrote it. I think there was a guy called John Wilkins from Camden Library, Andy Sawyer from the Science Fiction Library at one of the Liverpool universities, and myself, the really nice guy who edited, Keith Barker, and this other strange bloke. And we were sitting around introducing ourselves, and he said, "Who are you?" I said, "Mel Gibson." He made jokes and things. And I said, "And who are you?" He said, "Oh, Philip Pullman." I said, "Oh, great, we've both got names of famous people." He said, "No, I am Philip Pullman." And indeed it was, because he's a comics fan. And he wrote one of the chapters as well. And this was the first time somebody had tried to get a sort of recommended reading and recommendations about how to set up a collection out there. And off the back of that, people started saying, "She's gobby, let's get her standing up and talking about this stuff." And because I was a librarian as well as a comics fan, I was like an insider-outsider. So I could talk across the professional boundaries, in a sense, and say, "Look, try it." This was when there was a bit more money about, obviously. And people would try out test collections, circulate them. If they went out, great, they'd expand. So that was kind of where it started.
And you mentioned the deterioration of sort of circulation of girls' comics over the decade and things like this. But we still fight this battle of the day with people saying, well, we don't necessarily want comics in this space or this comic this space. And you'll occasionally see an article talking about, even in, you know, respectable national papers and magazines, talking about, oh, comics aren't really for adults and things like that. What does a society and a community lose if it doesn't focus on a comic, doesn't allow a comic into a library, doesn't allow a comic into a house? What does it miss out on?
Well, it misses out on a huge set of reading experiences, quite simply. just to look at the European models and see the way that comics are celebrated there and seen in terms of their art, seen in terms of their writing, seen and celebrated, then it's such a shame that Britain still has, to a degree, a lack of comfort with the medium. This is kind of embedded in our laws, you know, because of the furore in the 1950s, there's the act still on the books about protecting young people, and in that, the protection of young people from nasty periodicals, is sort of embedded a definition of the comic as for younger children and funny. Well, that means that more challenging work written for adults is always going to be seen as more difficult if you've developed a culture that sees anything but the comic for children as a problem, not as a wonderful kind of material to work with.
Thank you very much.